So this morning we're going to be reading from John chapter 13, verses 1 to 17. If you want to follow to in these pew Bibles, it's on page 1081. It was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." "Then, Lord," Simon Peter replied, "not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." Jesus answered, "A person who has had a bath needs only to wash his feet. His whole body is clean. And you are clean, though not every one of you." For he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said not everyone was clean. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I have done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them." So the story of Jesus washing his disciples' feet is one that's probably fairly well known to us. And it's often seen as a slightly nice, clean story, pun intended. We should be willing to serve one another, as Jesus did. We should be willing to do anything. Is that all there is to the story? Well, I think there's a few reasons we should take it a bit more seriously than that and look at it in more detail. There's certainly some useful information in there as to what service comprises. We'll be looking at Peter's responses in a bit more detail. But there's a couple of other reasons as well. The first one is that the early church took this passage extremely seriously. Certainly, some parts of the church decided to make it a sacrament in the same way as baptism and communion and a few other things. So they actually made it part of their regular service. They took it that seriously. The other is it's quite easy to miss just how shocking the story would have been to the original hearers. For a couple of reasons. It's recorded, first of all, in the other Gospels, there was a bit of a power trip going on. Luke records that the disciples were jockeying for a position. They knew that Jesus was number one, but who was going to be number two and three in the kingdom? And Jesus put an end to that. So a way of illustrating that, I don't know how many of you listened to The Archers, but there was quite an interesting storyline early this year when the Duchess of Cornwall was coming to visit. And the Archers, in the way that only they can, they seem to take an entire week going through a storyline which basically involved arguing who was going to be on the rota at Grey Gables, the main hotel, to welcome the person. And there was lots of sort of shenanigans and manoeuvring going on so that the right person would be on the desk to greet her, and other people would be somewhere else, so that the people who wanted to meet her and be most important in the hotel would be there. Now, the way the Archer storyline didn't go is that the Duchess of Cornwall turns up. She then sort of disappears off into the background, and she's later found hoovering the back room, which everybody had forgotten to do. You could imagine that people would be so obsessed with welcoming her that they let aside those basics of looking after a hotel. And in fact, that's precisely what's going on here in this story. According to the protocol of the day, if you were hosting a meal like this, you got a servant to wash people's feet as they came in. And you can understand why you'd want to do that. People wandered around in sandals, it was dry, it was dusty, it was dirty out there. So it was a nice courtesy to wash people's feet as they came in. Now, we aren't told who organized this meal, but we are told that nobody did this. So they'd actually sat down for dinner without this happening, and Jesus then has to get up from dinner and go and wash people's feet. So that's surprising in itself, that had been missed. The second reason it's surprising Jesus did it is this was considered one of the lowliest jobs you could do for people. And you can sort of understand that. If people are wandering around in an agricultural area with sandals, you can imagine what gets on people's feet. I don't need to go into details. So people's feet would be dirty, smelly, and there's some really quite unpleasant stuff there. And people didn't go for pedicures and things, so feet would have been probably not very nice things. There's even a rather nice story from the rabbis. A well-known rabbi came home, and his mother said, "I want to wash your feet as a sign of respect for you." And the rabbi said, "No, you can't do that. That's far too lowly for you." So this being a Jewish situation, the mother took the son to court and said, "I want to wash this person's feet." And the son won. So that's just an illustration of just how menial washing feet was in those lines. And the other reason it's quite shocking is from the structure of John's gospel. And we haven't been going through John in detail, so let me just give you a brief outline of how it works. The first 12 chapters of John are all about who Jesus is. There's all the sort of amazing signs, Jesus' sayings. And then we get to chapter 13, right through to 17. It's what's known as the farewell discourses. It's basically what Jesus taught them around the Last Supper. So we go from what Jesus did and who he was to Jesus, the sort of core of Jesus' teaching. So we expect something fairly important to come. You could imagine this like a sort of superhero movie, and they come in a very standard form as well. You get the first sort of 20, 30 minutes, which basically explains how the superhero got their powers, whether it's being bitten by something, radioactivity, all the sort of strange things you can do to become a superhero. And you then expect somebody to try out their powers a bit, and then you get the first really amazing thing. So in the same kind of way, we've seen Jesus go through. He's done some pretty amazing miracles. We're expecting the big one. And in fact, the text even links it in this way. In chapter 3, we say, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power. So we're expecting some great miracle. Verse 4, so he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, wrapped a towel around his waist. Now, if you're watching a film at that point, you might walk out thinking, this is a really rubbish film. They're not doing this right. But that's what John is doing in this story. He's actually shocking people. And he's actually saying that the idea of service and what Jesus did is, in fact, the most important thing he does. And there's clear links to what's going to happen in the cross a couple of days later in this story. But John is definitely saying that service is the most important thing to do as a follower of Jesus. So the disciples probably would have been shocked by as anybody of this. And Peter, you've got to love him. He's always the one to speak out and make the point. Peter always says exactly what's on his mind. And he has this conversation with Jesus. And what we're going to do is think through what we can draw out of the things that Peter said about service. So the first point to make is that you need to have humility to serve. And Peter doesn't really get this. Peter doesn't believe that Jesus should be washing people's feet. For Peter, there's clearly no top end to service. He's seen Jesus do really amazing things. He thinks there's no limit to the amazing large things Jesus could do in service. And in fact, the same goes for him. Peter has his faults, but Peter is brave. Peter is committed to Jesus. And at least in his own mind, he's willing to die for Jesus. I mean, we find out that he doesn't quite work out that way when he gets to near the crucifixion. But in his heart, he will serve Jesus. He'll do anything for Jesus. So for Peter, there's no limit at the top end of service. But is there a limit at the bottom end of service? How low can Peter go? And what Peter needs to learn is that there isn't a limit. You need to be able to serve in the lowest possible way as well as the highest possible way. Perhaps it's actually wrong to think about levels of service at all. I mean, that's the way we might think about it. There's sort of big, impressive bits of service and small things. But possibly that's the wrong way to think about it. It was mentioned to me that you're electing deacons tomorrow, and I think it's interesting where deacons came from. If you look in the book of Acts, the reason they have deacons is because of one particular area of service that needed to be done. And this area of service was considered more important than almost anything else and needed special people to look after it. What was this ministry? It was serving widows with food, which you might not think is that important, but for the early church, that particular service was really very important. Or think of this church. If the church couldn't find anybody to fill the pulpit for a few weeks and there was no sermon, then probably attendances would fall off. Well, unless you started showing sort of other things during the sermon slot. But probably people wouldn't be getting fed, people would get frustrated, people would start leaving. But if you couldn't find anybody to clean the toilets, then I predict the church would empty rather faster. Because after a couple of weeks, it would seriously begin to smell in here. So that's different forms of service. And I think what we learn about service and humility is that service is often a bit undesirable. There's certain things we like doing, certain things we struggle to do. Service can be messy, service can be awkward, and service can be rather inconvenient. It might be that somebody phones you up in the evening needing a chat about something. It might not be the best time to talk to them. It might not be somebody you particularly like. But if we're serving Jesus, then we should take our time out to spend time with that person and help them wherever they are. So Peter sort of gets that point, and then, as Peter often does, he goes way off in the other direction. And he insists on having an entire bath from Jesus. And Jesus again corrects him. So why shouldn't... why is the idea of a bath wrong? Well, we should think about what service is appropriate. And there's clearly a need for certain sorts of service, but some things might not need doing. Jesus says, if you had a bath, then you don't need to wash again. You're already clean, apart from the bits of you which have been exposed to the elements. So I remember when I was, this is going back quite a few years ago, when I joined the Cub Scouts. And we learnt the Cub Scout law. A Cub Scout always does his best, does his duty to God and the Queen, and does a good turn every day. And we were told the following story, that a Cub Scout was wandering along the main shopping street where we grew up, which is quite a busy road, and he saw an old lady standing at the side of the road. So he took her hand, he waited quite a long time for the traffic to clear. They left a really large gap because she was quite infirm and quite slow. And eventually, he held her hand and got her across the road. So he looks up and expecting some sort of thank you. And the lady says, well, thank you, dear, but I was waiting for my husband to come out to the newsagents, and I really wanted to be on that side of the road. So sometimes a good turn or service really isn't a good turn. And when we serve, there are certain temptations. It's very tempting to serve in a way we enjoy. It's very tempting to serve in a way, something we're good at. And it's also very tempting to serve in a way we've always served before. Now, actually, there's plenty of good in serving in ways we're good at and things we know how to do. And we'll be talking about that next week, I think, when we talk about the parable of talents, so I'll leave that. And it's certainly good to do what's on our heart, what God is calling us to do. But if there's really no need for what we're doing, there's no point doing it. It's better to do something that needs doing less well than waste time doing something well which just isn't required. So an example from our own church, I've taken over running the youth work recently, and we've basically stopped one of the groups that was running because the generation who were going to that group are now too old for it, and there isn't a demand for that particular group. And the person who used to run that group was actually quite upset, because it was something that really fitted her talents and her gifts, and she really enjoyed running it. But if you're only getting to 3 or 4 kids a week, there's no point running it. It's a bit of a waste of resources. So we've had to close that group, and we found that person something else to do in our youth work, which isn't quite as fit, doesn't quite fit their talents as well as the previous group did. But it really does meet the kids where they're at. And I think she's growing into it, and I think she's now very happy running that group after the initial weeks. So that's the second point about service, is we should consider what we need to do and what needs there are. And the third thing that Peter needs to learn is humility to accept other people's service. Peter is very, very put out that Jesus, whom he sees as superior to him, wants to serve him in this way. And I think this is a message really to our society today. We live in a culture where accepting any help at all is seen as a sign of weakness. We're called to be self-reliant, we're called to be independent, we're called to be strong. So you can think of the sort of old story about men and asking for directions, that no real man will ever ask for directions. That is only women ever ask for directions. That's the kind of message that goes around in our society. And this is actually a real challenge for a lot of us. I've been in workplaces where somebody didn't know what they were doing. They could have asked somebody in 5 minutes to find out, how do you do this particular task? And they didn't do it. They wanted to do it themselves, and they spent 4 hours doing it very badly, and then you had to undo it all afterwards. And you also get the situation where people get old or elderly or they're ill. They can't do things for themselves. And actually, sometimes it takes a bit of effort for them to actually admit this, and to actually ask for help. I don't actually blame those people for it. In some cases, it was a case of pride. But actually, these people have been in the society for, say, 70, 80 years, which says you must be able to do everything yourself. And it actually takes an effort to stand against that society and say, actually, I need some help now. And you get the situation in families. So I'm in my family, my father is in a situation where he's in a house on his own. He can't really maintain it himself. He's been offered lots of help by myself and my brothers to help sort the house out, help him move somewhere smaller, but he's refused it. And in that case, we haven't yet got to the position where we've managed to change the roles. For many years, he brought us up. He was our father. He served us. He helped us. Now in the stage of life he's at, he really needs our help. It needs to turn that way. But we haven't managed it. And I think lots of families struggle with this as well. And it does take effort on both sides and sort of understanding and sensitivity. But we do need to be willing to accept service as well as to serve ourselves. And there's a real spiritual analogue to this as well. And that's now moving back into looking at the passage as a prequel to the cross. And the real question to be asked about that is, are we willing to accept our own weakness, our sin, and the need of Christ to do something about it? And again, this is completely counter our culture. A lot of people, if you say, I'm a Christian, they'll say, why do you need an emotional crutch? Aren't you strong enough to live on your own right? There's plenty of other objections to Christianity, but that's quite a common one. Now, it's a real challenge to those outside the church, but I'm going to leave them for the minute. I think it's a real challenge for us too. Let's return to verse 10 and the story of a bath. Jesus says, a person who has had a bath needs only to wash his feet, his whole body is clean. Now, there's two things to be said about this. The first one is the sense in which Jesus means it directly. We as Christians have come to the cross. Jesus has died for us. We've been through that sort of fundamental washing, symbolized by our baptism. We don't need to do that again. But you do turn it around. We don't need a bath, but we do certainly need our feet washed on a regular basis. Taking the physical analog, we walk around the world in bare feet, and our feet get dirty. Our feet get parts of our lives get polluted by what's going on in the world. It's inevitable, and we need to get those bits of us washed. And that's why we come back to the cross on a regular basis, not to be saved again. We're already saved, but to receive God's forgiveness and God's regeneration of those bits of us which have been polluted, which have been damaged. And this may relate to our service. It might be that we have been too much in the world, that we are not willing to serve, we're not willing to accept service. It might be something else. So I want to leave you really with two questions. Firstly, what in our lives does Jesus need to wash today? Jesus offers to wash our feet, to forgive us, to cleanse some part of our life which needs addressing. What in our lives needs washing today? And the second question is, how would Jesus rate our service? Jesus says, I have set you an example. He tells us to do for others what he has done. And that's to serve in the sense of washing feet, to humble ourselves to do something for something else. And it's also in the sense of sacrificing his life. Are we willing to give up parts of our life for other people? So are we humble enough to serve? Are we actually serving where we should be serving? Or do we need to reconsider? And are we willing to accept Jesus' help and others' help in our lives?